Welcome back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. One of my one of our favorite guests has joined us. It's always a great pleasure to have her on the program and have the opportunity to talk to her about her art and what she is doing. Jillian Jagger is a wonderful artist, and she has an exhibit currently on display at the David Lewis Gallery in Manhattan. It has just been extended. It opened October 14th and now has just been extended through December 21st. It is called What Was and Is, What Was and Is, and it's been getting amazing reviews, and it's always a great pleasure to welcome Jillian Jagger to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe, for having me again.
I love talking to you. I love talking to you about your art. I love having you on the program. This is it. I was interested because What Was and is kind of a way of saying a retrospective, but you don't really use that word, do you?
Well, it would be hard to because there is a big, enormous, sprawling piece that's made of 65 parts plus a great big latex thing in one room, and then three single pieces that I made since July 1st in the first room. So if you, and then two or three in a room in the office and behind, which goes back to 1964. So it's David Lewis came to my place up here in Cahongsun, and I think was in his wonderful new world youthful way really struck by it, put me in an art fair in, I think it was March, and had me represent him in the Independent Art Fair, which comes all over the place, and was this time in New York. And it was very well received from what I could see. In fact, I sold something out of it. And he said, I want to do, in a way, he said, you don't have to have anything new, because I just want to show what you have here. And what I had here is trees, as you might well know, that are 15, 16 feet tall, and maybe the whole piece is 10, 12 feet wide, and it's made of four or five trees. There's no way we're going to get that in this perfectly lovely gallery in Chinatown. On the fifth floor of Eldridge Street, 88 Eldridge Street, because the door itself, I think, is 32 inches wide. And then, you know, it goes up, what, to 7 feet? And then you have a gentle elevator that used to bring people. And this kind of wonderful man said to me, well, you have all these things, these hoists. Can't we just bring it up, into the windows? Now, what gallery says to you, just take the window and bring it on up? And anyway, we couldn't because they're like courtyards and tiny. So we did what we could. He did what he could to represent me, having seen many years' work in a number of barns on my location in Kerhonksen, and I have that farm there. And what was wonderful is once he felt there was something so powerful here, he just put himself behind it. And next thing I know, he says, how about a show? And I thought, oh, my God, I've been writing due to whatever you do to your wrist, something tunnel.
Oh, a carpal tunnel.
Carpal tunnel that I'd been operated on. I couldn't use my right hand. So I didn't stop working on new stuff till July 1st. So three of those pieces were made then, and they were still wet with glue when they entered the gallery on October 14th. So it was so interesting that he did take the new works. He did take a number that he picked from going back in time. The reason for that, Joe, is something's happened where there's a genuine interest now going on in that art world, the art world I like, which is maybe rather small and wonderful and youthful, but the one that counts, I think. They've moved into this strange area, some of them into Chinatown. I do think that David Lewis is by far the leading one, because mm-hmm. everybody tells me that. And there's I did manholes in 1964, and I did them because I came back from Europe, where I'd seen 1,000 years ago in Cornwall this standing thing, and it had this design on the top of it, and it was carved in stone, many like this over Europe. I come back to New York in 64, probably, or 63, and I can't see anything like I've seen in Europe. I can't see time. I can't see. And when I saw the manholes on the street, I saw the same design I'd seen in that Cornwall standing or the one in Wales. And I thought, how interesting. Here's the timeless that in the street, the manhole that is ignored and nobody pays any attention to, but they're rather marvelous and I'm drawn to them. And I cast them in plaster. And then somebody followed me around, and then somebody, actually Charlotte Willard in 1964 was an art critic for the Post, New York Post. Mm-hmm. And she ends up in her article calling me a zeitgeist of what's going on. And she said, there's something in a new direction. The familiar is being turned into unfelt. Is being turned into something that has humanism in it and being seen in a new way. And so you get somebody, and then this is particularly interesting to me, called Sari Deans, who in 1955 did rubbings on manholes. Now, I knew nothing of her. That's what she says, too, mm-hmm. that none of these people knew each other. And then Antonio Fernandez from South America did manholes and, you know, the covers. And I think he did a painting of it. And then I'm doing it. Why? And I think the blatancy of America and my terror of the bomb in 64, I had been bothered by it, came from England when the war broke out, as I came, and I felt different from others in America going to school. And somehow the bomb didn't seem to threaten anybody but me and the Europeans when I came back. And I went there for timeless something in its abstract thing that's repeated through centuries, did these manholes, immediately got called a pop artist, which I really wasn't, except I did one with a big yellow line, traffic impressions. It said, "Kill Mary" in the cement. It was 7 feet by 4 feet on a big beam. And it was blatant and kind of nasty, and I felt like the emptiness of uncaring spirit. Now, tomorrow night, which I think is the 13th, Sari Dennis's show is having a walkthrough, and they're bringing me over to talk on a panel. Julie Robinson that contacted me, and the curators of this show are looking up the people that did manholes and never knew each other. It wasn't noticed. You know, we certainly saw shop windows with pie, and we certainly saw, you know, ties, and we saw whatever you can, cans,
yeah.
soup cans.
Sure.
But this wasn't, it's sort of interesting. I'm thinking, seeing the work of Sari Deans, and I've only seen it in photos, and I'll see it tomorrow night. But how interesting that she had feeling in it. And we weren't, any of us really at the time, represented that way. It was, you know, like, what were we doing that for? What were we looking for? And I'm beginning to wonder now, those of us that didn't know each other doing it every 5-10 years, did we have something in common? And that, he's got some of these works in the show.
When you talk about you know, having things in common, I'm curious, and we've talked many times, and I don't think I've ever really fully explored with you your background. I mean, your father was a World War I vet. We're a day after Armistice Day, and I find it fascinating because he was a wonderful sculptor whose sculptures are throughout Europe, throughout England, for the Royal Artillery Museum and memorials and other places. While he died when you were very young, you still, that there is this connection to sculpture. So is that, obviously you were influenced by him?
Absolutely. Just lately, Leonie, no, she's Third Dimension Memorials in England, has contacted me and said, could you give us your favorite sculpture of and your least favorite? And first I thought, oh, what am I doing? And then I thought, well, I know what my favorite sculpture is. It's been on my wall since I can remember, a reproduction of it. And it is a piece out of something called No Man's Land. And it is when my father, the only living soldier alive with eight people around him dead, sketched them and eventually made this enormous panel. I think it's 15 wide and whatever it is high. And it's an amazing panel of war and death. And nobody did that. They had idealized young men with wreaths on the gun. I mean, all over England, London. You don't see the kind of thing war is.
And this piece, you just handed me a photocopy of the piece. And what's fascinating is it's a bird's eye view. Looking down on the soldier, and it's so you see the head sort of going, and then that's the first thing that you see in the relief, right?
Now this is a detail off a panel,
yes,
called No Man's Land.
Yes.
So, and that detail, for whatever reason, I never knew. I just knew I loved it, and it represented him to me. I was four when he died,
yeah,
and he was such a part of my life. His hair, I can still feel it. He'd say, hit me harder with the brush, hit me harder. And he howled with laughter at me, and I had no hair. And he called me Fritzy because I fell down the stairs and I didn't cry. I loved the support he gave me. I remember him. And to this day, now and again, I have dreams of hugging a man at his belt buckle, and I'm only as high as that. And obviously, it is Dad. So I never really realized how much he influenced my work, because I was trained in Bauhaus, and he was obviously a traditionalist, but what I'm discovering is he was not. He broke the rules and did the brutality, did the dead man on the Royal Artillery War Memorial. Oh, no, you can't do that. Take it off. You know, the king cannot look out of his window and look at a dead soldier. He said, if you don't let me do it, I won't do the Royal Artillery War Memorial. If you let me do it, I'll do it for nothing. And he is being honored and celebrated by a man that came to my gallery on the 14th of November, when there's a panel for me on the 14th of November at my gallery. And Jonathan Black is talking about him, and he's telling me that they are now having him represent both wars as the leading person that managed on war. I mean, he's become so meaningful to the world in a way, because it's the real truth about love and empathy that comes out. And certainly my work is dedicated to empathy.
Yeah.
And sometimes brutality.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, you look just at this relief, and I don't want to read too much into it, but you see this depiction of wire and,
yes.
I mean, and that's very reminiscent of your.
But
of
I
your
never work. Knew I did that. I never knew it was. I've had this on my wall for all these years. I never knew I did that he did barbed wire. And that I'd seen barbed wire. I had to go back and look when somebody pointed it out on my rift. And two pieces, rift particularly, is full of barbed wire and has animals that were mummified off the road. That is coming in that connection. But I left sculpture because of him, because at 12 I was given a big show and they were men standing with their pants and their naked bodies, and all you had to do is stick guns in their hand, and I'd recreated my father's memorials. I'm not doing this, I said. I'm going to be a writer. And I won the short story prize at Princeton in my high school senior year. I'm going to be a writer. Off I went to be a writer, and I was told I had to go to a liberal arts school that I was now into, and I pulled out at the last minute and went to Carnegie Tech. I thought, I'll die there. And Carnegie Tech was my stuff. The dirty floors and the desks and the cigarettes and the communists and every my mother
and the communists.
My mother described it that way. I met the only communist I know that ever went there. But she described it that way. And I began the life I led by myself. And I didn't know he was an influence. It's funny.
So you have, if we look at your current work, and if it very much with animals and with and again with a struggle that is taking place. I mean, we could read war into that, couldn't we? We could read what your father was depicting in some way of a struggle that is taking place amongst us.
Certainly a struggle. Just lately,
Time Out New York.
Time Out New York.
Yeah.
This wonderful woman, I don't know from Adam, called Jane Doran, D-O-R-A-N, said what I would love to hear again and again, and nobody's ever said it really, that she is radically non-discriminatory, not only gender and class, but species. In other words, and then she goes on, I mean, what she says I love, and what she's saying is the commonality of it and the distance of it, and that the argument I'm always having is how do we get the commonality to come through with this hideous distancing and anger and war. So in a sense, what I try to find in my work, certainly in these latest, and it's always been there somewhere, is the object animal us that comes through a climate that would twist us and turn us into anger and rage and war. And the beauty of it, which I find in nature, in the tree, and I find it in the animal, horse's stomach in this case, under jaw of the horse looking up, that actual furry, bedraggled, muddy tummy has in it what we should be feeling and exploring and emphasizing in our lives of being a body, a spirit, a head, an intellect, or whatever, instead of taking one section out and being that. And it's like not touching the ground. And for me, the earth, the river patterns that repeat in a horse's pattern on its body over and over again, that is its commonality. And in nature, I find life. You also find destruction, but it's as if nature's going to keep surviving it and doesn't have rules and laws and doesn't tell us how to think.
You talked about the horse and the underdrive, because what you see in that is a power. You see the power in the animal. You see the control that the animal has. And yes, there is a struggle, but you also see the power that the animal or the cow or whatever that you are representing has within itself.
I think there is because what I think I got down to lately is the essential pattern, not the geometric pattern, not starting with this thing you could make a stamp out of. I mean, the manholes you could make a stamp out of, but they were beautifully relating to what all humankind had come to before. Mm. But this is like a kind of inner life icon thing that comes out of what you're saying, that kind of uplifting belief system without the angry jaw in the way, or the barbed wire, or the cutting them dead, or their fur. It's when you stay in the country and you stare at something, whether it's a moving branch of a tree, you find in it what's worthwhile. And at a certain point in my life, I thought there was nothing worthwhile. And I know a lot of people that a lot of sarcasm in the work of today's work, satire, it drives me crazy because they've gone over to pointing that out. And I guess there's a relief in being a smarty pants, because I certainly do it in my life, but I won't do it in my work. I want to know what I can care about, what you can care about, what brings us together, what we have in common. And that includes the horse, the cow, the dog, the cat, and you and I, and people we know and people we don't know, I want that to take precedence. And my work's about that. And I don't think about that when I'm doing it. I feel it. I reach it. I go inside a tree when it's hollow, and I feel it becomes part of me. I want that connection, not judgment, not anger, not dissonance. And that is what's driving my work.
Well, two things. One, I love you. Two, I love talking to you. It's just so beautiful talking to you and about your work. The exhibit is What Was and Is. It was just extended to December 21st at the David Lewis Gallery. And check out the Time Out New York piece because it really is beautiful. You can find out about all of the events that Jillian mentioned by going to jillianjagger.com. jillianjagger.com. Jillian, you're such an inspiration. I love having you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. And once again, I didn't know I was here. I thought I just came in and time has gone. I don't seem to have trouble talking, do I?
We love you having you talk.